Decades after civil rights laws overruled racist policies starving non-white neighborhoods of investment, a new analysis shows that deep disparities linger. Joining me to discuss his new report on the issue is Jake Blumgard from WHYY's Plan Philly Project. Jake, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
Let's discuss the process called redlining. What does the color red refer to in this case?
So redlining is kind of shorthand for the practice of withholding loans from certain areas of a city, usually based on race mostly, but also on class and kind of the structure of how the neighborhoods are laid out, like row house neighborhoods, for instance, were often redlined as well.
And who were the federal agencies that conducted this?
So it was the Homeowners Loan Corporation, which was something that existed in the 30s to kind of refinance the mortgages of people who, you know, were struggling during that time. They redlined areas across the city and across the country where they felt like, the loan or the environment was like going to be least advantageous for paying back loans.
You're saying very directly that these decisions were based on race rather than, say, the age and condition of the infrastructure being evaluated.
Well, it's a little bit of both, honestly. There are parts of the city that were redlined that were majority white at that time, too, but tended to be working class neighborhoods, usually where like manufacturing was kind of mixed in with the housing. A lot of the federal guidelines from back then really wanted to steer people towards these kind of single family homes of the kind you would find in the suburbs and kind of like move people away from kind of classic urban neighborhoods. Part of the problem here was that African-American neighborhoods in the city in particular, pretty much any neighborhood with African-Americans in it got redlined, whereas there were plenty of white neighborhoods that escaped that. And while the agencies in question were kind of leery of lending to Jews or Italians as well, it was really the African-American neighborhood where like any number of African-Americans would kind of set up a red flag for the agencies and the private lenders that they worked with.
So that safety valve you're alluding to, whereby the FHA would approve big projects like, say, Levittown, that was a safety valve from urban whites to flee the city.
Exactly. And so those original redlining maps I was talking about, the Homeowners Loan Corporation maps, were from the 1930s. But then, as you said, the FHA, which was operating at the same time in the 30s, but then continued its operations after the war. And yes, they insured a lot of these suburban areas and also made sure that the lenders would only sell their homes to white people. So basically, white people were able to leave the city, whereas black people were kept in the city and their neighborhoods were also starved of loans. And so it made it very hard to repair houses, to start a, you know, like a small shop or a restaurant or a bar or something. It created this kind of landscape of inequality.
What allowed some formerly redlined communities like Kensington comes to mind to evolve from that former status?
You still see race being such a huge factor in the landscape of inequality, so that when people with money start to move back into the city, starting in the 80s, but obviously picking up a lot of speed now, you see them kind of moving back towards areas that tend to have white populations of some kind left, like South Philly, East of Broad, Kensington, as you said, Manayunk, even some parts of West Philadelphia that tended to attract middle-class white people moving back to the city had retained a small white minority. So like the neighborhoods to the west of Penn, for example.
Now, these federal policies started back during the Great Depression, and to whatever extent they were well-intended at that time, it quickly, for lack of a better term, metastasized. Though since these laws were overturned back in the civil rights era of the 60s, why are we seeing pervasive evidence of it today?
These patterns of inequality were really locked into place. Also, the Fair Housing Act of 1968, while it did kind of prevent these agencies in Washington from continuing the patterns of behavior from like the 30s and 40s and 50s, that law has been undercut a lot. Very few presidential administrations of either party have been particularly interested in trying to propel integration.
We are indicting the federal role. Not the city was overtly party to it, but in 2018, what role can the city play to help reverse the trend?
So there's a few things that the city has done this year. A couple of policies have been created by the council to kind of try to provide loans to low-income homeowners who need to fix up their houses. There's also a program that gives grants to very low-income homeowners, of which we have a lot of in the city. But the federal environment has really restricted. We've been seeing lots of programs shrink. And so the city has been having to rely more and more on its own money, of which there simply isn't that much.
In addition to your analysis, describe the work going forward whereby the groups with which you partner will continue to take this effort further.
Right. Little Giant Creative, which is a kind of marketing agency here in town, received $300,000 from the Knight Foundation. They're going to be holding a series of community meetings to talk about redlining and its effects. This is history that is very well known among, you know, university professors and journalists, but is not generally understood by the kind of population at large as much. And I think they're really going to be trying to inform people of the history and how it's shaped the city. And, you know, I think a lot of people, both here and across America, are hoping that as more people learn about this history, it'll create an environment where we can maybe address all this on like a national scale in the future.
And with this disclosure that the Knight Foundation supports WHYY, Jake, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Yeah, no problem.
Jake Bloomgard of Plan Philly.